All right, let's kick it. Week 11, college football. Brent Rollins here. Like he is every week, obviously, does his PFF stuff, does his rival stuff, knows college football inside and out. And sorry, had a high school basketball game, the start of the high school season. So running a little bit late. No excuses.
How'd it go?
1-0. It was like a it was not good for the other team. It was like 100-33 or something. It was really not good. Not a good. It was an ungood start for the Loganville team down the road. Not solid, but it's a good start for North Oconee. But this week, some good games, Brent. Some good things to watch. The playoff rankings obviously are now out, so we got those and starting to fill in some dots. And then this week we'll go a long way. And I think this week has several teams that are in the college football playoff picture that will be out. And whether you be LSU, Bama, and then I think Ole Miss, if Ole Miss loses to Georgia, I think they're gone. So some good games with some college football implications.
The Ole Miss-Georgia game is one where what's interesting about the Ole Miss team specifically is if some things went their way a little bit more so against LSU, or if LSU didn't, Nussmeier didn't make amazing plays in that game, they're sitting here with one loss and feeling really good about themselves. And also Jackson Dart's probably in that sort of Heisman conversation where he's maybe not as much now, but I think this is one of those games where if he comes in and balls out big time, you might be, because of the stats he's put up and then them getting a big win, you might see his name get back in that realm. But this is one where which quarterback takes care of the football kind of game.
Well, and, you know, listen, Jackson's fiery. He's got some swag. He's an elite competitor. He's a cool dude. You can tell, like, his team loves him. And basically every game for them has been very similar. If he completes that deep ball in this offense with the amount of space that they create, they're not a great offensive line. Like, they're very average up front. But because of his ability to run the football, his ability to move, the weapons on the perimeter, the system in which Lane Kiffin kind of goes together, and then the tempo in which they can cause problems with communication, you know, Georgia's defense has been very hit or miss. And the pass rush and the pressure on the quarterback has been hit or miss. This is an opportunity where I feel like they've got to assert themselves and they got to dominate this football game. Like, it is on the defensive line up front, and you're going to have to rotate bodies because they're going to play fast, and they're going to get first downs because Jackson Dart's legs is a big part of it. But I feel like this is a big show me for the Georgia defense. Like, show me you're elite. Show me you can show up week in and week out and not have those inconsistencies.
The deep ball point is the perfect point for what this offense has become, because if they hit those like they did against Arkansas and then obviously earlier in the season, you're in the high 30s and above. They didn't against Kentucky. He was 1 of 7 against Kentucky. Last year against Georgia, 1 of 6 on 20-plus yard throws. He actually has one of the better passing grades in the country overall, as well as in the clean pocket. So Dart's been lifting his game, but do those deep ball completions get had? Because then, like you said, it sets up the tempo. But the running game, they're not a movement line at all.
No.
It's kind of like I liken it to to Le'Veon Bell with the Steelers, where it's just kind of patient, and then maybe the defense screws up and I pick a hole. But anyway, so are you reading your phone and checking something?
Yeah, I'm actually checking.
What we just getting this thing.
I got a text from our producer buddy, homeboy, and the woman of Colby Young, and Colby Young's the wide receiver for Georgia that got suspended. Not Rob Thomas. Rob Thomas got kicked off to start the season. But Colby Young, probably their best playmaker out wide. Big, huge target, 6'4" wide receiver. Last month had charges with his girlfriend. I'm reading it right now live, so this is phenomenal.
But according reading to is phenomenal.
Do what?
I was just giving you a hard time about you reading.
Well, me reading, period, is a hard time. But basically, it looks like from Schlayball, our boy Schlayball, that the woman is trying to drop the charges. She wants them dismissed. You know, he was arrested on October 8th on a misdemeanor charge of battery and assault to a woman, a girl who's with him. He's pregnant. And the 20-year-old described herself and told police She went to his apartment to discuss their relationship, and then she said something bad happened, and now obviously retracting the statement. And I'll say this, Brent, that could be enormous for Georgia. Like, absolutely enormous, because what they're missing on the outside is a guy like that. He's a difference maker. He is not, you know, the most twitchy guy in the world that's going to go smash people with speed, but he's a guy that you know exactly what you're going to get, and that's contested catches. That's 6'4", long, big body, playmaker. They're missing him. This offense, like when I saw him in spring to start the season, Brent, I said the dude will have 10 touchdowns. I guarantee it. Like, just because the frame and the body and the opportunity, and he was well on his way to being able to do that, but got kicked off the team. And this would be interesting for Georgia. Obviously, it's not going to affect this week, but that's the kind of guy you want back for sure.
Yeah, who knows in terms of what that means and what it actually becomes. But speaking of stopping the Georgia offense, Ole Miss's defense has played much better this year. Walter Nolan, his impact on the defensive line to me is very much an exponential one, where he's made a lot of other guys better. If you look at some of the transfer guys that they've got, Chris Paul Jr., Princely Pumanmi Ellen from Florida, Trey Amos from Bama, Banks from South Alabama, all these guys who were solid where they were previously have just, like a rising tide lift all boats, putting a bunch of good players together. It's kind of like if you went from having me as your point guard in basketball to someone that could actually really do things, and you had other better players around you.
I've actually done that.
Makes you a better basketball player.
I've done that in our pickup leagues. When we got rid of you, we got better. No, I think
it's called me getting older.
Yes, I think that you're exactly right. Like, this is where, listen, Ole Miss spent their money. This is where they spent their money. They spent in the transfer portal on, you know, getting guys, getting that defensive line solidified, because it's been a huge weakness, and that's their defense has been awful. And so being able to say now, we addressed all of these, and I said this last week, Brent, and it's going to 100% come true, I promise. All of these guys up front are getting drafted. Like, their starting defensive line are all going to the NFL. Like, they're that good, and they pressure the quarterback. They got like 200 and something pressures this year.
Yes.
Like, Georgia has 120. They got like 220 Ole Miss. Georgia has 123. Like, the difference is stark. Like, they've been wrecking the run, and they've also been wrecking passers and QBs. And so, if they can own this football game, we already know Georgia's not been able to run the football consistently. That's been a theme throughout the season. Carson Beck under pressure, turnovers last week. Like, it's coming down to – it's going to come down to the Georgia's offense, and can they score? And it's all – by the way, it's also at Ole Miss, which is going to be rocking. Like, it's going to be a crazy place. Like,
they know their season's on the line.
Here's the thing. Here's the bottom line. If Georgia plays their best game, they're better. Like, I know that. You know that, Brent. If Georgia plays their best game and Ole Miss plays their best game, they're better. We haven't seen Georgia play a really good, complete game. The crazy thing is they're continuing to still win. And I'm going to argue this, and this is going to drive you, Brent Rollins, crazy, because we've been talking about this for years and years. We wanted Kirby to open it up. We wanted Kirby to be that guy that chucks the pill all over the yard. Evolve like Nick Saban. Evolve with Tua. Evolve with these guys. I don't think you need that with this defense. This is a good defense. By the way, offenses in college football, QB play is not good right now. It's very inconsistent. Offenses are inconsistent. This is an old school type thing. And if this game's close in the second half, this is what Georgia does. They win. They win those games because of body blows and toughness. And that's what I think we're going to see with Ole Miss. Like, I think it's going to be a close game. I think it'll be a low scoring game.
Yeah.
But at the end, who do you trust to make plays? And Ole Miss is getting there, right? Like, they've slowly back-to-back 10-win seasons. Like, they're getting to the edge. If they win this game, I think they're in the playoffs, because I looked at their schedule.
They play Florida, Harris plays,
Mississippi State. Like, they're in. This is it. At home, this is the time. Like, this is the time for Ole Miss to step up and to shut everybody up who's been haters on them and make a big game happen.
All right, so I have a question for you before we move on to the next game. If Carson Beck goes 8-for-14 for 93 yards with one touchdown and two picks, does Georgia win the game?
Yes, because this year that's all that's happened is when he's played bad, they've won. No, they don't win. Like, you can't.
The reason I asked those specific numbers, those were David Green's numbers when you guys beat Ole Miss 35-15.
Yeah, but what was Verron Haynes' numbers? I bet Verron rushed for 220.
26 for 192 and two touchdowns.
Yeah, Verron owned the line of scrimmage. Britt Rollins, I saw the post, by the way, you put up there with Jermaine Phillips' pick six and fat three-technique defensive tackle in there doing a spin move. Me and my heyday.
Huge
my
pads. Well, you and your huge pads.
Big pads. Big pads. All right, where are we going next, Uncle G?
All right, so to a game that has been a top 20 matchup for 17 of the last 20 years, Bama at LSU.
Wow.
Like, that's I was looking through the series and just kind of seeing what's happening there, and just you see the high rankings each and every year as you consistently go through that game. But can Alabama pressure Garrett Nussmeier? Can LSU, you know, slow Milroe's legs and have him not play because, you know, coming off a rested week for him? It's a loser leaves town match, 100%.
Yeah, loser's gone, loser's out. Winner remaining schedule is not you don't have to worry about the remaining schedule. It's pretty good for both. They both have a chance if they win to win out. These are very similar teams, and I say that. LSU lost to USC. Bama lost to Vandy. Both of them played South Carolina extremely tough to the wire. Both found a way to win. To me, there's a couple things that really stick out. Like Nussmeier, I've bragged on him, and I think he's an absolute stud. But at what point, Brent, do we get some balance? And they have none. And it is hard to consistently beat good teams when you don't even attempt to run the football. Like, again, when they did that against A&M and they had stopped attempting to run the football, A&M started to show disguises and play the pass and put in their passing packages, and they had a lot of success and they forced turnovers. Like, I'm staying in my dime. I'm staying in my nickel packages. I'm not putting bigs on the field. I'm going to consistently rush the passer. If LSU doesn't run the football and doesn't attempt to, they're going to get stomped out at home, like in Death Valley. They're going to lose. Like, they're going to lose. They have to form some kind of balance. They've had none of it this year. The only time they had to do it was at South Carolina in the second half, and they gave it to Durden, and he rushed for 100 yards. And, like, it was, okay, they ran to the left a ton. They were good. It worked. Like, I think they've got to – I just don't see it unless they're going to try to run the football somehow, some way.
Do you think that this is one of those games where DeBoer says, all right, Jalen, I need you to tote it 15 to 20 times because we've come off a bye week. We're rested up. I need this game. Just going to run through it. Because like you said with the running game, I was just looking through some numbers. Alabama's top two running backs only have 800 yards in the eight games.
Yeah,
they're on pace for 300-500 yards less than what they've had for almost a decade running from their top two running backs.
Okay, and here's another thing when you look at – and styles make fights, guys. Like, you can't just look at games and go, oh, they're just better. Like, you have to match them up. Here's another thing. This to me, by the way, the only case you can make to me, Brent, is it's in Death Valley at 9. Like, that's the only case I got for you, because LSU versus running quarterbacks. Do y'all remember what happened in A&M when you inserted Marcel Reed? Like, he's still scoring. He's still running. He threw the ball two times. Didn't even have to worry about it, and shredded LSU. Lenora Sanders at South Carolina. South Kakalaka. He had 100 yards in the first half. Like, before he got hurt and didn't play again, running quarterbacks have given LSU fits. Like, I don't think this is a good matchup for LSU. They've got to find a way to run the football, use the home crowd, like, play action a little bit with Nuss. But I got the Tide, man. I don't trust their pass rush, which is why this could be a good matchup, because Bama's pass rush is by no stretch what we've seen over the past couple years. But I just think the inability to run the football, you know, Alabama doesn't have great, you know, diversity, but they can hit the deep ball. They can run the football with, you know, two or three different guys. They got the perimeter attack going now with the short, quick game. I just think degree of difficulty with Alabama is a little bit easier. So I'll take the Tide.
Let's see. All right. So some unbeatens that still remain. Miami at Georgia Tech. Does Georgia Tech get Haynes King back? Last I looked, he was still day to day. So who knows? Does Cristobal get to exercise some demons from last year? Because that was really bad.
Yeah. Remember last year, Brent's talking about the old, they all he had to do was take a knee and get out of there, but he runs the football. They fumble. Three plays later, Georgia Tech and company
scores and wins the game.
You know, I here's the thing. Haynes King makes this offense so much different. You're right. And without him, I don't think they have a shot because we know what kind of, this is going to be a shootout. Like, and Georgia Tech struggles to stop the pass. That's not a good recipe. Like, no. If you struggle to stop the pass and you got Cam Ward and Restrepo and company coming to town, I'll take the Canes. I'll take the Canes big. Even if King plays, he's been banged up and it's been a while. And just, I think what comes with that is always a little bit of rust. And Georgia Tech, man, it's been it was a good start to the season. And that FSU win felt really, really good. And then you started to look at FSU and kind of changed your opinion of what happened. So I'll take Miami big.
All right, Michigan at Indiana. Rourke comes back, doesn't really miss a beat.
He did to start the game. He actually struggled to start the game. And he threw some passes, Brent. Like, he tried to throw a quick out that, like, literally went in the crowd. I mean, he threw some – like, you could tell there was some effects from the hand, but Michigan State obviously didn't matter because after the 10-0 start, it was 47-0 run. Listen, the Indiana thing is interesting to me, too, because of the ranking – and where they're at, because, listen, I can give you different boxes, Brent, but here's the thing. If you play a weaker schedule, here's when I reward you. When you curb stomp people, when you boat race people, and you beat them to death. And that's what they've done. I mean, their closest game was Washington. I think it was 17 points. And so, like, Indiana's – listen, we're Michigan's going to be a physical challenge. And speaking of the Washington game, I remember watching that game. Washington was running the football a lot, and at will. And Indiana struggled kind of with that two tight ends and big boy ball. Can Michigan do that? Like, we know their quarterback play is ungood. It's just ungood. It is. Like,
it's kind of been playing both a little bit last few weeks.
And that makes sense. Orgy. Like, make me prepare for both. You know, like, neither one are great. I'm going to primarily be a running football team. By the way, you know, it sucks. It sucks to be Colston Loveland right now because that dude is good. Like, he is really good. And Colston Loveland could be the best tight end in the country. We just don't know about it because the forward pass is a struggle in Michigan, Ann Arbor. Good Lord. But to me, Indiana has scored against everyone. I expect that to continue. The margin for error for Michigan is still so thin. Like,
yes.
If they turn it over, they lose, right? And here's one thing I love about Indiana's defense. Every time I watch them, you start watching those guys along the front. Speaking of transfers, Palooza, a bunch of guys from JMU and all over the place. Dude, they compete. They don't stay blocked. They have, you know, they have good technique, which is fun to see. The run defense at JMU was elite. They're elite here at Indiana, like one of the better run defenses in the country. And Kamara, number 6, is an animal. Like, this dude, you watch him, Brent, heavy hands. Like, really, like, he gets his hands on you and he does some damage and gets off blocks. And so watch 6 against Michigan. This will be big boy football for him and probably the most physical challenge, obviously, that Indiana's faced. But I've got very little hesitation, Brent, saying that I like Indiana because if Indiana hits 27, 24
half like their average.
Michigan's like the old, like Michigan's like the Iowa game. When they get down 10, like they're mathematically eliminated.
It will be interesting to see if Indiana actually struggles a little bit and gets into some third downs because they actually are the team in third down the least in terms of number percentage of time they're in third down in the country. One quick one, Army at North Texas, maybe upset. Points galore. I know the over-under in this game is 63.5, and if you look at every one of North Texas's games, it's a
fun
75-plus combined points all over the place. It depends on whether Bryson Daly plays. I think that if he plays, I think they've handled business, take care of business. If not, then it's interesting.
Yeah, and he definitely didn't he didn't play last week, and they looked a lot more human. They went from like 50 points a game, 48 points a game to 24, I think they scored last week. So yeah,
20, 24, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, so that's a big deal. Army, again, alive as that non, you know, Power 4 team, like Boise, they're ranked in the top 25. So that's a big game to watch. And if you're one of those people that are, you know, making sure cheering for your squad. You want them to be a top four seed. You don't want Boise in there. You don't want Army in there. That's a game that they can definitely lose. And they got, you know, Notre Dame down the road.
Yep. And then BYU at Utah. Utah's lost four in a row, less than 20 points in all four. Struggle bus galore, but obviously this is a big time rivalry game. And for BYU, LJ Martin. Yep.
The Holy War. This is one of the most, like, when you go to this game, by the way, I've called one of these games before, and it's just, it's cool. Like, it is really, really cool. I mean, it's, the disdain is cool. It's fun. Like, I enjoy, you know me, I thoroughly, like, I like when it's legitimate, not fake hate. Like, I really don't like you, and I want to rip your eyeballs out. Like, I enjoy that. That's how I was as a player. So I think they'll have some of this. You never know what's going to go down, but BYU's a disrespected team right now. Like, I would be playing that card for sure because I'm undefeated. I've beaten two ranked teams. I stomped out Kansas State. Like,
yes,
made them not want to ever play me again. And BYU still behind a bunch of one-loss teams with a pretty decent resume, which doesn't bode well for them if they get a loss. Like, you all of a sudden get a loss and you want to talk about falling off a cliff. Iowa State, right? Like, they got a loss and bam, you slide down because, you know, you can tell when you're not the most explosive or you hang around in games and don't, you know, destroy people like we talked about with Indiana. I mean, Indiana, that's what's so impressive to me about Indiana, just destroying everybody that they play. But I think it'll be good, but Utah's inability to score is they are offensive to watch. It's offensive.
All right, so three other games that are of intrigue from ranked teams that may or may not, if there's any of these that you think is maybe an upset potential. I like one more so than the others. We got Clemson at Virginia Tech, Colorado at Texas Tech, and then Washington at Penn State. Which of those three are you thinking is a upset potential type deal?
I think
because I know where I'm going.
Texas Tech can win that football game. There's no doubt. Like, I don't have any doubt about that at all. Like, I was taking notes on Texas Tech actually last week, and Morton had missed some time at QB, and he came back, and he makes them a little bit different. Now, listen, so much of their offense is off script, and it's not like elite by any stretch, but they got a running back, Taj Brooks, who's a little bowling ball. Like, he's built stocky like these new school. That's how these running backs are built now, but bounces off tackles, and, you know, they scored last week. They showed you some onions last week versus Iowa State, scoring late. You know, holding it together, even though the rain was horrible. But Josh Kelly out wide, number three, you watch, they force feed him. He makes plays. So Texas Tech, I think, could put up some points and be right there with Colorado. Colorado's sneaking under the radar too, by the way. They've been playing good football. I mean,
still have a chance to win the Big 12.
Just continuing to play good. And Deion hired good coordinators. Like, I think the change at coordinators, you can tell, like, more organized, more of a plan.
Just getting better.
Yeah, I mean, just – And Travis Hunter's missed several parts of games that when he's been dinged up. And I feel like last year, if he missed parts of games, they were going to lose.
Yeah. Me, it's Clemson at Virginia Tech. Louisville just ran all over Clemson, and Virginia Tech is going to likely try, and I think will do the same. All right. You mentioned it on Saturday night. You wanted to give some people some flowers. So the floor is yours to talk about the Arizona State Sun Devils.
I mean, like, this was a bad team. Like, this was a really bad football team. And they've had some restrictions, you know, with Herm there and all the things that went down with, you know, stuff going on off the field. But Dillingham comes in and they don't even make any bones about who they are, what they are. And they're physical. I love his personality. Always have. I think he's a really good play caller. They're leaning on the running game. And when I say leaning, Brent, like, they're all in on the running game. Like,
oh, hey, Scataboo or Scatabo, I think is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, he's an animal. Dude.
Yes.
I don't. Do you have PFF grades, Brent? Do you have access to that with your?
Oh yeah.
With your job, I looked that up while I talk about him because he's been fun to. He's been fun to watch. Like, he runs angry. He's a big senior running back. Like, he's also you know, I don't know if he's, it's doubtful to questionable this week, which makes it. He is their offense, but big old shoulder pads, runs super hard, light skin running back, so you know he's unathletic. That's how that works. You know, big try hard guy. But they've just been impressive with very little expectations. You know, going to a bowl, their over under, I bet you, was probably like 2.5 to 3, and they're already at 6 wins and, you know, flirting with being ranked in college football. So Kenny Dillingham, exceptional job. Nice job. He's starting to build a program, and it's impressive to watch.
Fifth highest graded running back in the country.
See, look at that.
For your numbers there. My flowers go to two teams that are in a game that matters. South Carolina at Vanderbilt. Like, who would have thunk that this game actually would mean something and both programs would, like, Vanderbilt's already going bowling. South Carolina is rolling to the point where they feel like, hey, if we were in a playoff situation, we could play with anybody because we've shown we can play with anybody for the most part. Like, that to me, one, Pavia is still rolling, things like that. Yeah, that just is a game that was always a ignore it game.
Yeah.
Previously.
Kind of game.
That is now a legitimate football game between two really good teams. And that to me deserves, like, and I think both of them have an argument to be ranked, especially, you know, granted, Missouri 6-2, Vandy 6-3, and Missouri beat them. But, with some of the wins and how Vandy's played, the South Carolina, some of their wins, like, okay. Yeah. I think they have that argument.
And I think that's a great game this weekend. I am right there with you. That deserves to be talked about because, I mean, South Carolina has three losses, right? They should have three losses on the season. The Ole Miss game got out of hand quick. Again, awful fourth down on their side of the field, faked the punt, sucked, fumbled. 14-0, ball game over. Like, South Carolina is not a passing team that wants to play from behind. Like, that's not their game. But dude,
LSU with 3-point loss.
Well, close game to Bama, close game to LSU, right? I mean, it was like they very easily could be in the playoff hunt. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but they've got elite pass rushers, they've got an elite defense, and Sellers at the QB spot. Like, this dude runs, Brent. He's a man.
Mancho.
Like, he shrugs grown people off him like, hey, go sit at the little kids' table. Like, I don't know what you think you're going to do, but don't touch me. And, like, it was weird last week because he slid short of the first down marker one time, and I was like, what are you doing? You're like 245. Like, don't ever do that again. And then he ran angry against A&M, and you saw him, you know, making play after making play after making play. And, you know, the wide receivers on the outside have been banged up like crazy. Rocket Sanders, by the way, healthy and looked like a man-child. Yes. So I think the running game will travel. I think they'll pound Vandy with the running game. But, again, just watch it. When you watch this game, just watch Vanderbilt death by a thousand cuts. Like, it is literally just paper cut, paper cut, paper cut. And you're like, leave me alone. Like, first down, play clock. All the way down to one, snap the football, paper cut, paper cut, paper cut. I mean, it's just Pavia makes some magic happen. Like, this will be an awesome game, and both quarterbacks will make plays. And who's at home this one?
Vandy at home.
Vandy at home.
4:15 kickoff.
Who you got?
I'm going with the Fighting Clark Lees. I think he gets another one at home. Makes the mojo keep, has the mojo keep rolling.
I'll take South Carolina because Shane Beamer's post-game celebration when he sung to his wife was absolutely amazing. The dancing, the necklace, the swag, the energy. And here's the thing. I think South Carolina can be the one team that does what most teams can't do to Vandy, and that's make them play behind the sticks with negative plays. Like, they got guys that will penetrate, mess up the timing of all that option stuff that they do, and probably put you in some passing situations where Vanderbilt's not the best, but both teams, man, tip of the cap. Like, those are teams that you looked at before the season and you were like, please put Vandy on my schedule. Please put South Carolina on my schedule. Don't give me Texas. Don't give me Georgia. Don't give me Ole Miss and Tennessee and Alabama. Now you're like, dang, I got to play Vandy? Son of a gun. I got to play South Carolina? That sucks. Like, those are good teams that nobody gives any credit to and hard to get your guys up sometimes. So tip of the cap to both those folks.
All right. So now that you've had a day to kind of process – and maybe relook at the actual rankings since you kind of looked at them on the fly last night. anything stand out to you? Is there any soap boxes or, hey, this isn't right? Or are you good with stuff?
I don't understand Indiana and BYU. Like, I don't get how with both of them, listen again, here's my rant. I didn't know you were going to go here, but I like this. So
Okay.
With Indiana, how can you not make a case for Indiana being ranked higher? Again, haven't played a great schedule, but they've taken a frying pan upside everyone's head that has stepped onto the field with them. They've even done it with their backup quarterback, with a bunch of transfers, gelling everything together, and they keep just whacking people upside the lid, dong, dong, and keep winning. So I'm not sure what else you have to do if you're Indiana to be ranked behind people that haven't beat really anybody that look great or have been dominant. Like, BYU has two great wins. Like, you're telling me that BYU and Indiana both being undefeated should not be ranked higher? I would strongly disagree. That wouldn't be the case. BYU has definitely played a few more close games, but the quarterback play is really good. Martin runs the rock. Like, they're very physical. They're extremely well coached. So, and when they played good competition, you know, 18-15, I think it was, with SMU, which was a really close game, but they destroyed Kansas State by 30. They're just a team that has looked good. I could make a case for both of those teams being ranked higher.
Eric agrees with you in the chat here. Penn State, zero top 25 wins. BYU, two top 25 wins.
I mean, that's a perfect example of, like, you can't tell me that's not about your brand. I don't, why are we ranking teams? How can you put teams in the top 25 and say these are the top 25 best teams in college football? And you have two wins against them. Another team has zero. You have zero losses. They have one loss, a good loss to a good team. But that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, I don't understand that. It's not a knock against Penn State. Penn State's a good team. Like, they're a really good team. And listen, Penn State might could beat BYU. They might could beat them. Penn State might could beat Indiana. But what they've accomplished this season, Indiana's accomplished more, and absolutely BYU's accomplished more. So, by the way, you could say the same thing for Texas. You could say the same thing for Tennessee. I mean, I know those are powerhouses and they have more upper echelon talent. I know that. But what they've done so far, if you're going to put other teams in the top 25 that they've played and they've beat them, I don't understand how that works.
I think the interesting part for me was, in looking back at it, is it doesn't matter now, but it will matter eventually, is where they keep Ohio State, because they're setting up a situation where they're going to have no choice but Ohio State potentially be, or Indiana, by the way, if Indiana wins out and has to play Oregon in the Big Ten championship. But with the way the SEC has gone, the championship game person is going to have two losses. The loser is going to have two losses, where so you're going to have a two-loss SEC team and then that's a non-champion, and then likely a two-loss Big Ten, or one or two-loss Big Ten team, depending if Indiana wins out. But I just don't see them setting up an Oregon, Ohio State a third time potentially. I think that's one where you've got to.
I don't want to see that again either, homie. I'm with you on that.
It might happen if they're at five and Oregon's at one, and say Oregon beats them in the Big Ten championship game again, and you're saying, oh, they got to put them at five because they're the highest ranked non-champion, you're going to potentially see the game a third time again. I'd rather not.
Well, and how about
needs to be opposite sides?
And how about and by the way, I think they'll do that. I think they'll make sure when they
in the end, people, I think they will.
I think they'll adjust the rankings to make sure that we don't have matchups that we've already seen twice. I think they'd be smart to do that. But you know, the interesting thing with me too is Notre Dame. Like, what a great out of conference game to play. I mean, it's really hard when you play. If Notre Dame wouldn't have challenged themselves and gone to Kyle Field and had a loss to NIU, they probably are on the outside looking in. But because they challenged themselves, they got rewarded, man. And they've got a win over an A&M team that's going to be in the top 25 the rest of the year. A lot of respect, some big wins. So I think that's a – you know, that shows you too with the scheduling. Like, Boise State's sitting good because of their scheduling. Like, they scheduled Oregon, the number one team in the country, barely lost. And those type of things are going to matter down the stretch too, of who you scheduled and who you played. And, you know, randomly BYU having SMU on the schedule is a big deal, because those two teams, and looking at them down the stretch.
So one question, when you look at some of these rankings and think about it, do you care more about the loss or the better win?
See, that's a loaded question because here's the reason why. Not every loss is the same. Like, a loss is not a loss. Like, there are some losses that I'm going to give you. To me, again, this is why I want a committee that freaking knows the game of football and why I want people in those rooms that are coaches that have been through so much of this game that they know going on the road is the toughest thing to do in college football. Like, they know when people are beat up, but also they know when you got hit upside the head and you got beat down. There's a difference between, Brent, a beat down and a close loss. Oh, you could have won that football game. There's a difference in a loss to a really bad football team. Like, when you lose to a bad team, that has been the biggest thing in the playoff committee with the four. That has been the biggest albatross around the neck. Like, that's been the thing that's really caught people the most is when you start to have that bad loss that how do you lose to them? Because I think it's interesting because a lot of times you got a team that beat somebody head-to-head but lost to somebody that's really bad. And I'm like, I would argue that the team that lost to the other highly ranked team, that's a better loss than losing to a four-win team. You know what I'm saying? Yes. So that's why you take all of it into account. That's why injuries are taken into account. Man, that's why I want people in that room that are football dudes that eat, sleep, and breathe this crap like we do, doing the free freaking football channel because we love football. You know, like, that's what I want.
Yes, I agree. That's all I had. Nothing more. Just that last question. Unless you got something else that you want to hit.
No, I like it. You get me riled up. It doesn't take much, I know. But interesting week, man. I think we're gonna get some answers and
clarity. I think this is a good week of clarity.
Clarity and I think the Carson Beck thing, man. Like, I just.
It's a thing.
It's starting to be a trend in another big moment, big game. I wouldn't be surprised to see this morph. I said it. I said they're paying him a lot of money. He's their guy. They don't run the ball well. I said this offense is going through Carson Beck. I said that weeks ago, and they've done it. And the results haven't been probably what they want. And now I'm going to be interested to see if it is more quick game, screens, reverse like we saw in the second half, make plays. Here's another thing about Georgia games. If you ever watch a Georgia game, you go, how the freak is it the second quarter already? Because drives usually take a long time. You know, they don't give up a bunch of big plays. And so the possessions are shortened. But every time in the second half, man, like, I think it's the personality of their coach. I think it's the way they practice. I think it's the type of guys they have. They wear on people. And Jackson Dart is game. He is a competitor. So I'll be interested to watch this one. And we'll see if we have opinions that are changed really, really quickly. So,
by the way, of his 11 interceptions, 5 are on 1st and 10. That to me is the one that's got to change above all else. Yep. Throw it away on 1st and 10. If he does that, I think that's a lot of that goes away.
No doubt. Big week of games. Like you said, clarity Saturday. Thanks for joining us. Hit the like, hit the subscribe. If you like us, we'll keep doing this. We will see you Saturday night and more college football. Dude, it's week 11. That's weird, man. It's been, seems like it's gone really, really fast. We got the rankings. Next week will be a rankings again, and we're getting to the home stretch, homie.
And you got more playoff teams, so you got more playoff podcasts and things to prepare for, and as opposed to that big break you used to get, a couple weeks break you had.
Those were fantastic. Those were really awesome.